I am extremely grateful to all of you for taking this precious time to be here this evening. I was just remembering in 1966, Brahmananda Prabhu and Gargamuni Prabhu were taking initiation at 26 Second Avenue. And Prabhupada had them invite their widowed mother. She was also a Jewish mother, very deeply concerned with her children's welfare, and also very confused by what they were doing. Because factually, they both became brahmacharis, and a short time later, sannyasis. And they were the only two children in the family. There was no other family. Srila Prabhupada, at the time of initiation, when he gave them their beads, he instructed them to bow down to their mother and take the dust from her feet. Srila Prabhupada also instructed them that whenever you see your mother, you bow down to her and get the dust from her feet. Brahmananda Prabhu and Gargamuni Prabhu, they did that. She was in complete culture shock. She did not understand these things. But at the same time, she understood that what Srila Prabhupada is inculcating within his students was such respect to others that is utterly unknown to the Western culture. One time Brahmananda Prabhu went to his mother's house to visit her. He rang the doorbell. And when she opened the door, there was nobody there. And then she happened to look down, and there was her son offering dandavats. She was so shocked, she said, "Get up before the neighbors see you." So yes, although Srila Prabhupada taught his disciples the utmost limits of renunciation for material sense gratification, he also taught the culture of how to respect our elders, how to respect those who have helped us in our lives. Without deviating from the pure principles of bhakti. That type of harmony is very rare, but it is very sacred. How to be renounced without becoming hard-hearted? Generally, in the impersonalistic school, renunciation creates hard heart. But what bhakti is all about is a soft heart. A heart that spontaneously and naturally melts in love for God and in genuine compassion for others. That is actually what real renunciation cultivates. And Srila Prabhupada wanted to teach us that. The tendency of renunciation is that we become egoistic. We expect respect from others. But Prabhupada taught us that real renunciation is not to expect respect, but to spontaneously be eager to offer respect. After Chaitanya Mahaprabhu took sannyas, when he came to Shantipur and met his mother, he offered his dandavat obeisances again and again to her. For a sannyasi to see a previous wife is to violate the principles of renunciation. But for mother, brothers, father, there is no such prohibition, so long as one maintains one's spiritual disciplines and one's exclusive devotional service to the spiritual master. In this regard, I would like to share with all of you who are so very dear to my heart some appreciations I have for a very devoted, loving mother. My mother was born in the Chicago area. Her parents and grandparents were from the eastern sections of Europe. And due to religious persecution, in order to save their lives, they migrated to the United States of America, not only seeking freedom of religion, but seeking the freedom to live without being tortured and killed. When they came, they had nothing. When she was a young girl, there was the Great Depression, where the majority of the American public was cast into poverty. Her family was very poor. She lived in an area where very poor people, but all of them had very great dignity and morality, because they had a culture of virtues. When she was a small girl, her father died of a disease. Her mother, due to a very hard life, was very sickly. She was a young girl. She had an older sister. And her older sister basically was supporting the family so that the younger sisters could go to school. One night, a large man attacked her sister as she was coming from work to rape her. She ran and ran and ran and ran. And ultimately she escaped, but she was in such trauma that she never recovered the rest of her life. The only way to give her the ability to survive was they had to admit her to a government charity mental hospital. She would stay at home as much as possible, but sometimes it was just impossible. It was just such trauma. So at that time, my mother was a teenager, young. She had to work to support her whole family. No father, no older sister, no other relatives. Still, she went to school. Despite such a hard life, heartbreaking experiences, she maintained great integrity. She never had association or relationship with any man in her life until she married my father, which is actually quite rare in America. And these days, even in Bombay. My father would sometimes tell me that when he was young, he said, I lived in poverty, but you cannot even imagine the poverty of your mother. And yet, they just had a tiny little flat, tiny little place in a very poor neighborhood. He said it was always spotless clean and always the most loving, generous hospitality. So they were married. And actually, my father felt that she was a woman of such morality, of such decency, of such dignity. He really wanted to marry her. But she was 1 year older than him. And it's against the tradition. They actually met at a Jewish cultural center during some event, religious organization. So he told her that he was older than he was. Something interesting is years later, the first time they ever left the country of America was to come to India to see all of you. This was after they were married for about 50 years, 48 years, something like that. My father gave the passports to the visa office and told my mother to pick them up. And as she was walking home from the Indian embassy, she saw my father's real birth date. She was furious. She said, "You lied to me. You told me that you were 2 years older than me. You're 1 year younger than me." She said, "I never would have married you if I knew this." And my father, in his natural humor, he said, Thinking back, I should have told you then. Both my mother and father were literally completely dedicated to their family. They may not have been Krishna conscious as we know it, but Srila Prabhupada explains that we can dovetail many virtues of this world in Krishna consciousness. If you have many zeros, if you add one in front, then how much it increases the value of your ability to serve. So I would like to express gratitude for many things that my mother and father gave me that I am now, by Srila Prabhupada's unlimited causeless mercy, being allowed to use to serve him, to serve Radha Gopinath, and to serve all of you. They were both so absolutely dedicated with responsibility to the welfare of their family. Both of them, literally, they would be happy to suffer and die a million times every day for our welfare, for the welfare of the children. From a relationship point of view within this world, they were selfless in their service. I accepted the renounced order of life. Never had a girlfriend, no children. However, the values that they gave me of what real family means is very much being shared with all of you as my family. To take great responsibility and make great sacrifices for family, for children. So, by Prabhupada's mercy, I can dovetail this propensity that they gave me in the service of all of you. My mother, she took care of her children and husband 24 hours a day. By the time I was born, my father was working and making some money. They bought a small house in a small village when I was about 4 years old. And as my father was really, really struggling to support the family, mother cooked 3 meals a day single-handedly, cleaned the house, took care of the medical needs of the children, everything. There was no servant, no assistant, no maid. She did everything. And she really, really worked hard. And always cheerful, always just happy to serve. She emphasized certain virtues which I genuinely hold sacred in my life. As some devotees have already said, how she emphasized gratitude. She never cared if I said thank you to her, but to absolutely everyone else, she was meticulously concerned that from my heart I thanked anybody for anything they did for me. If I went to a friend's house and the mother gave me some cookies when I was a small child, when I would come home, she would say, did you thank them? Sometimes she would even call the mother and say, did he thank you? Said, you must be grateful for anything anyone does for you. And coming from the condition that she did, where actually she had very little, her whole life was a struggle from childhood on, she really genuinely was grateful to anything anyone did for her. And she considered it one of the most important duties as a mother to instill that quality in her children. And knowing that if a child is spoiled, they cannot be grateful. She was very, very conscientious that none of her children would be spoiled. Sometimes during our birthday or something, we would get toys. And the nature of small children, they fight over the toys. Have you seen? So my mother would sometimes say, toys are poison. It's not that she wouldn't let us. They were there. She would allow it. But she wanted to tell us, toys are poison when they cause greed and the sense of ownership. Because as soon as there's sense of ownership over anything, there's conflict. There's fighting. And she was so very, very deeply concerned that her children did not have envy or conflict for each other. Because she knew if they don't have envy for conflict with envy for one another, they will not be envious toward anyone. My mother and father, in all my years, I never saw them in a same bed together. I never saw them in any passionate relationship with each other, which in America is quite unheard of, because they very much wanted to instill with us a sense of purity and morality. Another special emphasis of my mother, she had, it's not a mantra, but it was a motto that she would repeat again and again and again. Would you like to hear it? I was born and raised hearing this. It's the thought that counts. When it was her birthday, it really didn't matter whether someone gave her a beautiful jeweled necklace, a diamond ring, a little card or a flower. She taught us that all these things are irrelevant and material. It's the thought that counts. The fact that you have thought of me to offer something with affection is all that matters. She really wanted to teach that material objects are not important in gifts. It's the love. It's the affection. It's the thought that matters 100%. I remember one time one of my brothers actually was working and brought her a very beautiful gift. And I just went out to the backyard and picked a rose from the garden. And we both gave it birthday. And when she received that rose, she cried in happiness, in gratitude, and said, "Thank you. It's the thought that counts." Of course, her consideration was on a relative platform. But this principle, by the grace of Srila Prabhupada, when dovetailed with the philosophy of Krishna consciousness, is sublime. Because really, that's what bhakti is. When that sentiment is spiritualized. Patram pushpam palam toyam yome bhakta prayachchati. Whether we offer Krishna a leaf, a flower, or water, it's the thought that counts. It's man manabhava mad bhakto. Krishna says, always think of me. If we are thinking of Krishna with devotion, Krishna is happy. Because of my conditioning, of how I was indoctrinated in these principles by my mother, when I later became a devotee and read the story of Krishna going to Mithila, Shrutadeva was a poor Brahmin. And he invited Krishna, "Come to my little hut." And Bahulasva was a king. "Come to my palace." Krishna expanded himself in two forms simultaneously. Bahulasva offered him jewels, precious metals, incredible feast of opulent bhoga, professional dancers and singers entertaining the Lord, put him on his royal throne. And Shrutadeva just offered Krishna a straw mat and offered him some rice he begged from the neighbors. And he personally danced for Krishna. But Krishna accepted both equally because they offered with devotion. Krishna does not care for the material aspect of anything. He's concerned with the purpose. I'm very grateful that she conditioned me from my earliest infancy with that sacred gift. Which Srila Prabhupada so wonderfully taught me how to use in the service of Krishna and the Vaishnavas to whatever extent I can. Although in America the divorce rate is about 70%, My mother and father, their faithfulness and chastity to each other. At the time my mother left this world 2 days back, they were married for 58 years. And the solemn chastity of their vows was something that affected me. Now please know, I have not recognized where I got some of these qualities from until a few years ago. But I remember when I was looking for a spiritual master, I was committed that once I take initiation, I will never leave my guru for the rest of my life. I will die, but I will not leave. And even after accepting Prabhupada as my guru in heart, I refused initiation 3 times, although Prabhupada personally offered it to me. Because I just considered, once I take these vows, I can never break them. Yes, Prabhupada is a pure devotee. He's my guru. But can I be such a disciple that after taking these vows, I'll never turn to anyone else? I'll never look for any other alternative, either spiritually or material, to my relationship with my guru? I took it that seriously. And I must say that much of that was the conditioning of seeing the chastity of my mother for father and vice versa in their vows. My mother's greatest joy and pride was to seeing her children do anything good. She would, if I got any good grades, if I was polite to someone, if I did good in a baseball game, anything. Her joy in life was just to see that her children were doing something good. And ultimately, that her children were happy. That was her happiness, to see that we were happy. A serious remembrance that I have, which I have shared before, is while doing some sports when I was a teenager, I dislocated my shoulder 3 times, and I had to go for surgery. When I came out of the anesthesia, my mother was right at my bedside. Now in those days, every American adult that I ever knew smoked cigarettes. It was practically equal to ladies putting their, what is it, bindi? Kum-kum. It was like that. It was just tradition. If you didn't smoke cigarettes, you weren't an American. Yes? So just by that culture, or lack of culture, whatever, she just was socially affected like everyone else. And she was smoking 2 packages of cigarettes every day for 15 years. Because in those days, believe it or not, no one knew that cigarettes were bad for health. In fact, people thought they were good for health. They were cleaning you. That was the propaganda. It wasn't until the 1970s that people really started dying, and then they realized it's bad for health. So when I came out of anesthesia, she was smoking a cigarette, like practically every American woman. And I started choking. I said, "That cigarette is making me sick." When I said that, she wept incessantly. She went outside of the room while crying, threw the cigarette away, and took a vow that if smoking cigarettes is unpleasing to my child, I vow to never smoke another cigarette again. She never smoked again from that day. One of the most difficult habits to give up is that. That was just the nature of her willing to sacrifice for the welfare of her children. And that vow that she took deeply affected me. That really love means sacrifice. I understood through that love does not mean romance. Love means sacrifice for the beloved. That impression I consider very valuable in spiritualizing in the service of Srila Prabhupada. Both my mother and father, practically anybody they knew, they became the best friend of, because they were just so socially just kind-hearted and giving to everyone. Practically any of my friends' friends or neighbors, they would always tell me that your mother and father are our best friends. They had a very nice sense of loyalty, not only to their family, but to their acquaintances as well. Of course, by the inconceivable arrangement of the Lord, should I continue?
No.
I was not happy in that situation. My heart was deeply longing for something beyond material relationships and material possessions, or even material achievements. So there's great longing for God realization is becoming more and more prominent in my heart. I went to college for one semester after high school. And then I told them I was going to a trip to Europe for 3 months. Then I would come back to continue college. They were very apprehensive. I was hardly 19 years old. I had never been out of America in my life. But they knew I was very much spiritually searching. They were very understanding people. I had so many crazy habits when I was a child, and they just tried to understand me. Every time my mother bought me new clothes, I would say, "I will never wear new clothes. You have to wash them 10 times, then I'll wear them." If she bought me new shoes, I would scrape them with stones to make them look old before I'd wear them. And my mother, she couldn't understand where I was getting these ideas from. This was when I was 5, 6 years old. Even I didn't know where I was getting these ideas from. And I always wanted to sit on the floor when eating. But the problem is the family always took together at the dinner table. And she would always, every night, she would personally make an incredible feast for the whole family, 7 days a week. By herself. She had such desire to please. So for me to sit on the floor means to sit with our dog. Because our dogs ate on the floor while we were eating at the table. That's the American tradition. So they said, why do you want to sit on the floor? And I would say, because I'm against chairs. I said, why are you against chairs? I said, I don't know. So for years, I stood at the table and ate, standing up, while everyone was sitting. And one time I remember we went to a restaurant and I was standing. And the waitress came to give me a chair. And my mother stopped the waitress and said, no, he is against chairs. The waitress never heard of such a crazy thing in her whole life. But my mother just accepted that that's who I was and what I was. And she loved me and tolerated me. Anyways, I was supposed to come home for school. The semester started. There was no sign of my existence. I had decided to go to India in my search for enlightenment. Several months passed. Actually, over a month passed, overdue. And ultimately, they got a simple little aerogram from Iran. When they saw this letter from Iran, Persia, they didn't know what was happening. And there I told them I was not going home. I was going to India in search of God. They knew I had no money. I explained to them that my friend I was traveling with, we separated. He went somewhere else. So I was alone, hitchhiking through Turkey, Iran, Afghanistan, and Pakistan. Now, mothers, if your 19-year-old child was hitchhiking through those places alone, would you be worried? Both mother and father were out of their minds in grief, anxiety, and worry. They had no right to write me back. And then they were getting letters from the Himalayas. Dwarkadish was not actually accurate. I wrote to them about once a month. There's about 20 letters over about a 2-year period. And the letters, I was just preaching philosophy to them. Philosophy that totally confused their minds. I was telling them to chant Om. I was telling them to renounce material possessions. I tried to be very kind, but still, I was trying to enlighten them according to my new discovered spirit of renunciation. They were bewildered. They were practically worrying themselves to death. I wrote about every month because I knew they would die if I didn't. And I didn't think renunciation was to kill people. It was to find God. When ultimately I came home, I was a hardcore sadhu with a begging bowl and some Vrindavan dust. It was such a total culture shock for them and me. And I was with them for a few days. I wouldn't even sleep in their house. I slept in the back on some cement outside. I was doing arti and chanting japa all day. Very painful, especially for a mother and a father. And being young, I was trying to be polite, but I was quite insensitive. In one sense, you have to grow up to understand what grown-ups think. And the nature of their affection. And soon after that, I went to see Prabhupada after just some days, and there I just surrendered my life and soul to the service of Radha and Krishna and my spiritual master. Now, for a conservative, traditional American family, this was the wildest, most incomprehensible thing you could imagine. In the Jewish faith, worship of idols is considered one of the greatest offenses to God. And I was the full-time pujari, living on a mountain with no toilets, with no possessions. They couldn't understand why in the world their child would want to live like this. But I can tell you honestly, although they couldn't understand, and their hearts were actually very broken by my behavior, both my mother and my father, not once did they never criticize the Hare Krishna movement. She never had ill feelings toward Prabhupada, who took my whole life. She was always respectful. Always just struggling and striving to somehow or other appreciate what I was doing. Now, a few years later, 1982, they called New Vrindavan one day and asked, "Is Radhanath there?" And the operator said, "You mean Radhanath Swami?" They said, What is this Swami?" They said, "It means he has taken a lifelong vow of celibacy, never to marry, never to own anything. It's a life of total renunciation." There was silence. The operator said, "Mr. and Mrs. Slavin, you don't sound very happy about this." They said, "We're not. I was 31 years old, taking such lifelong vows. That's only 7 years older than Lord Chaitanya, who was 24. And that's considered very young. 31 years old is the prime of one's life. But yet they just accepted it. Never criticized, never complained. They were always just struggling to try to understand and appreciate. And they always wanted to trust me. They felt that I had a good heart. And I was in search of God. And I was trying to do good things for others. So even though the package was incomprehensible, they appreciated. In fact, my mother... Vegetarianism in the 1960s and 70s was unheard of by their generation. It was totally unheard of. But when my mother heard I was a vegetarian, when I told her, I will not eat 99.9% of what you have in your house, she went out, she didn't try to convince me otherwise. She just went out and got all these vegetarian cookbooks and was showing me recipes and saying, is this, will Krishna accept this? Because I told her, I cannot eat anything Krishna does not accept. Will Krishna accept this? And she would only cook those recipes that I verified Krishna would accept. So she was just learning a whole new type of cooking, just to make me happy. She was a very kind-hearted lady. In fact, she used to make this one kind of pastry, which is a very traditional pastry, which was very bona fide as far as the ingredients. And she would come and bring me boxes of it, and told me, you know, distribute it to your friends, distribute it to whoever you had, put it in a refrigerator, and remember me whenever you eat it. So at that time, actually, I was doing college preaching. And it's hard to get people to take foods from Hare Krishnas. But I would very honestly, with conviction, I'd say, my mother made this. She'll be very happy if you eat this. And no one ever refused. Of course, it was offered to Krishna. In 1989, they came to India because they really wanted to understand what I do. In the West, everything I did for 17 years, actually 18 years of my living in the West as a devotee, it was utterly incomprehensible and socially totally unacceptable to their whole conditionings in life. They literally had to struggle and strain to just show me appreciation, love, and encouragement, never trying to criticize me, never trying to change me, because they have an inert respect for my integrity and a trust for my goodness. But in 1989, they came to India. And there was a program at Srinathji Prabhu's roof terrace. And the types of people that came there, very, very cultured, generous-hearted, and noble souls, the Vaishnavas, a different kind of Hare Krishna devotee than they ever saw in the West. In the West, it was mostly young people, the age of their children. It's very difficult to respect them. But here there were people their age who were completely dedicated to the tradition. And when they saw how everybody was so attentively participating in my chanting, they started chanting joyfully. First time they ever did that. They were joyfully clapping their hands and chanting. And when I started speaking, in 18 years of being a devotee, they never heard me speak. I was mostly giving lectures at colleges, and I was ashamed to invite them because I didn't know what would happen. It was the first time. And my father and mother were shocked. Because actually, I have a confession to make. My whole childhood, I was so shy. My mother would always go to school to talk to the teachers how I was. She was always just meticulously concerned with my welfare and my progress. And every class I was in, every teacher had the same comment to my mother, that your son, he's so shy, he never says anything. But I remember my sixth grade teacher, he broke the ice a little. He said, your son is so shy, he never says anything, but he laughs very loud. So really, that's the way they knew me. Very shy, not speaking much anything to anyone, very quiet. And here I was with a microphone giving a lecture. And my father said to my mother, is this our son? And my mother replied in awe. She said, that's his body. But I think there's a different soul inside. And in that lecture, I spoke about them. I explained my gratitude. And it was actually the first time I ever really expressed my gratitude to them. And I did it in front of maybe 150 people. Through the lecture, they were both crying. Not like 18 years where they were crying because they couldn't understand, but they were crying with pride and with extreme happiness. And then afterward, managers of Indian railways, industrialists, doctors were coming to touch their feet. They didn't like that. But what completely overwhelmed them is how all these distinguished people were telling them how great their son was. All they could do was cry. All their life, they only wanted to be proud of me. All their life, they only wanted me to be a success and to be happy. They had to struggle
struggle against all their conditionings to somehow or other try to appreciate me for 18 years. But now they could actually genuinely understand what I was doing. And it was one of the greatest moments of their entire lives. After that program, I walk them to their apartment in Seaface Park, and incessantly crying, they were saying, "Son, we are so proud of you. You are doing so good. Now we understand what you've given your life to, and we're so happy for you." It was here in Radha Gopinath Temple during a Sunday program. In those days, there was not so many people coming. Maybe 50, 60 people for the Sunday program in 89. And I was leading kirtan, playing mridanga. And the brahmacharis were dancing. And then one of the greatest culture shocks of my life. First I saw my mother, who's an old American traditional lady, blissfully twirling around, holding hands with Srinathji's mother, dancing. In front of Radha Gopinath. And then I saw my father with Srinathji and the brahmacharis with his arms raised, running back and forth in the temple. They both danced through the entire program, happily chanting Hare Krishna, actually with faith in Krishna, with faith in the holy names. That's what the association of Radha Gopinath's devotees did to them. It was not artificial. It was not a show. Just by association with people that they really had respect for, they developed faith in the holy name. They developed faith in the deities. They developed some faith in Krishna consciousness. And Radha Priya Mataji, I asked her, if anyone could get them to chant japa, it's you. No one can refuse anything you ask. So Radha Priya came and brought them japa beads and asked them if they would like to learn japa. And she taught them. She's like their guru. And they just sat there with japa mala for about half hour, just chanting rounds. It was inconceivable. Their lives changed. Every night they wept in joy after the program. And Mahaprabhu and Palika, Janava Mataji, and so many devotees invited them to their homes for prasad. And just the gracious hospitality, all they could do was cry in happiness. They had never seen such kind people. But what really affected them is they had a tour of Krishna Chandra's father, Arvind Muffatlal's factories. And he was driving them in a Mercedes-Benz, and they saw these factories that were city blocks high with tens and thousands of workers and all kinds of sophisticated machines. And they saw a magazine with Business Week of India with Arvind Muffatlal's photo in the front cover, the conscious of Indian industry, Arvind Muffatlal.
He was famous,
wealthy, prestigious person.
And Mr. Muffatlal told my father and mother that we are, that you and me, we are very small people. But your son, he is great. They couldn't believe that. They said, but you have this big, beautiful house, and you have cars, and you have wife, and you have children, you have grandchildren, and soon you're going to have great-grandchildren, and you have so much everything. Our son doesn't have anything. He just sleeps on different floors every night, and he doesn't have a family. He has nothing. How do you say that he's great? And Arvind Muffatlal said, what we have is really of no value, but what your son has is of great value. We are poor and insignificant compared to him. And when he said that, they were convinced that there's something more to the Hare Krishna than the American newspapers tell the public. So we went to Jaipur, and I took them to Govinda Dev Temple, the deity of Rupa Goswami. And when they saw the deity, they both bowed down spontaneously and offered donation to the pujari. We went to, after Jaipur, going to Govinda Temple, Radha Damodar Temple, Radha Gopinath Temple. These were for seeing temples, bowing down and giving donations. It was really a different type of tourist guide that they had this time. And then they wanted to see Taj Mahal. They said, we cannot leave India without seeing Taj Mahal. So we went to Taj Mahal. And then 2 days later, they had a flight from Delhi. So early morning, we were leaving Taj Mahal to go to Delhi. And it happened to be my birthday. 1989, that means it was my 38th birthday. My parents told me, we haven't been with you on your birthday for over 20 years. We are so proud of you. We're so overjoyed with what you're doing for the world. We'll give you anything we have. Just tell us what you want, and we'll give it to you. Because by this time, my father was quite wealthy. So I told him, do you promise that you'll give me anything I ask for? And they both said, if it is within our means. I said, in a few minutes, we're going to be passing through a very sacred holy place. It is called Vrindavan. We will spend the day in Vrindavan. From the moment we get to the outskirts, in the car, you will clap your hands and chant Hare Krishna with me until the evening when we leave. We arrived in Vrindavan at about 8 in the morning. And I started chanting, and they were chanting. They already learned how to chant and dance and everything at Radha Gopinath Temple. First place we went in Vrindavan was near Radha Raman Temple. Should I continue?
No!
I told them you should take off your shoes because we're going to do a lot of walking, and all, wherever we walk, on the streets, you just clap your hands and chant with me. They said, yes, we will do. So the first step out of the car
My father put his foot in a thick, high, warm, moist pile of cow dung. And his silk stocking was soaked, was covered to his ankles. And he said, "Well, what should I do now?" I said, "What you promised to do, chant." So we were walking down the streets, the three of us. It was a Harinam party with myself and my father and mother, who were just typical Americans. And we're just chanting, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. And ultimately we came to a pump well, and I pumped and pumped and pumped and said, "Put your foot under here." Then we sat in Radharaman temple, in this ancient temple, hundreds of years old, in front of the self-manifested deity of Gopal Bhatta Goswami. And for about 45 minutes, we just sat on the floor in front of the deity, chanting. And my mother and father were totally absorbed. Their eyes were closed, and they were just chanting and chanting and chanting. Every now and then, they would just stare at the deity and chant. I was profusely thanking Srila Prabhupada. In the farthest reaches of my imagination, I could never conceive of my parents in Vrindavan, in front of Radharaman, with great feeling, chanting Hare Krishna. And then we had Harinam procession to Radha Govinda, Radha Damodar. And they were so enlivened by the experience. Of course, at one point, my mother asked where a bathroom was. And I said, "Mother, the only bathroom I know is near the banks of the Jamuna on the ground." She said, "Then I will hold it till I get to Delhi." So at one point, my mother spontaneously, she said that the Mufflal family and the Desai family treated us so nicely, and we didn't give them anything. We must show our love for them by giving them a gift. And I asked her, "Well, what would you like to get them?" And she said, "Let's get them deities." It's my mother's idea. She said, "Let's get them deities." Because they saw how much devotees love deities. So we went to Loy Bazaar, and they sat down in Ganga Prasad Shamsundarlal's place, and Ganga Prasad was offering them saris and chadars as gifts, and they were very happy. And they said, "You please choose the deities because we don't know how to do this." So we chose Gornitai for Krishna Chandra Prabhu's family and Krishna Balaram for Srinathu's family, Prabhu's family. And my mother and father were so very concerned that I expressed to these people how eternally grateful and thankful that they were, and that this was just a small gesture of their love. So we got those deities. And those are the main deities that Krishna Chandra Prabhu and Radha Priya and their family worship to this day at their home. And since 1989, they have been the the worshipable predominant deities of the Puna Yatra every single year. That was actually my mother's gift of love. My mother had the idea, and my father paid. But he also wanted to give a gift, but my mother's idea was deities. So then, when we were in Delhi, actually at Krishna Balaram Temple, they were so happy to see the cleanliness of the temple, and they were most happy to use the bathrooms. Prabhupada really did design his temples in such a way that Westerners can feel happy in Vrindavan. They said, this is the best of all temples. And they actually were dancing. They were dancing in front of Krishna Balaram, Radha Shyam Sundar, Gornitai, in Vrindavan Tham, chanting the holy names. The kirtan continued from 8 in the morning till about 6 at night. They chanted all day long. And then we went to Delhi. And as they were going to the airport, I was seeing them off. And my mother and father both said, these are the happiest moments we've had in our entire lives. We have met the most gracious, good-hearted, and nice people we have ever met in our entire lives. And they're very socially popular in America and have many friends. But they said, we have never met friends like your people. And then they started to really cry and said, son, we are so proud of you. We have no words to express. Thank you. And they said every part of this journey was a highlight except the Taj Mahal. That was the only place not spiritual that we went. So they Siddhartha Gopinath Ji Ki Jai. Yes, okay. I forgot. When we came back, when they came back to America, they were just telling everyone, distributing tapes, giving books, showing photos. The first grandchild my older brother had, he's Jewish. He married a Catholic wife. They were discussing, should the baby be blessed in a Jewish synagogue or baptized in a Catholic church? And from my understanding, it was my mother who intervened and said, your brother is a priest. Your brother is a priest. He's very highly respected. You should baptize our grandchild in the Hare Krishna temple. Now for an American mother to have that conviction, quite extraordinary. So my parents flew all the way to Tucson, Arizona, where my brother lived, and took my brother, convinced him to come to the temple to have a baptism ceremony. Could someone call there and say I'll be about a half hour late? Okay, Radha Krishna knows the number. So, in the ceremony, actually I had to make one up because I didn't know about baptizing children in Krishna consciousness. But it was a bona fide speculation. I told them it was my mother, my father, my brother, his wife, and his wife's mother. That was all. And the baby. I said, in our tradition, the blessings of God descend on the child to the degree all the relatives sincerely from their hearts cry out the holy names of the Lord. So you raise your arms high and chant loudly, begging God to bless your child. And my mother stood forward and said, I'll teach you how to do this chanting and dancing. She said, because I learned in India. She said, you just watch me. It was one of the most intense kirtans I've ever seen. They were just eyes closed, crying out Krishna's names for the child to be blessed. In Christianity, they put water on a child to baptize. So I had Ganga water in one of those sprayers, and I put Ganga water and Jamuna water on the child. So they thought it was very authorized. Then I sprinkled it on all of them, and I said, you need it more than the child. So like that. And after that, my mother, she spontaneously just cried out, give her a Krishna name. And so I said, are you sure? She said, yes, give her a Krishna name. Her name was Sarah. So I said, her name will also be Saraswati. So they were very happy. And the amazing thing is, my sister-in-law, is that what you're called? My brother's sister? My brother's wife? About a year later, she told me that the child was very naughty, but whenever she does something good, she always says Hare Krishna when she does it. And the only time she ever heard the mantra was at that ceremony when she was a tiny infant. So then the second child was born a couple years later. And naturally, by this time, it was so highly publicized that so many relatives came to Tucson. And everyone was Hare Krishna to bless the child, crying out Krishna's names in front of Gornitai deities. And my mother said, give him a Krishna name. So his name was Balaram, along with another name, Bill. So yes, to parents, what can be more precious in their lives than their grandchildren? And yet, they wanted their grandchildren blessed in the Hare Krishna temple because they had such faith and appreciation for their son who was a Hare Krishna devotee and the wonderful people that he associates with here in Chopati, Bombay. Actually, all of you completely transformed their hearts. During their second trip to India, they were eager. They always wanted to come back. But due to health reasons, my father had to have a bypass surgery and so many things, it took them 10 years before they could come back. Although they were always talking about coming back. And the devotees gave them gifts. Prema Bhakti Mataji gave my parents a deity of Krishna carved in sandalwood. And to this day, it's in the center of their house. Raghunath Prabhu gave them some cloth, a big cloth, wall size. It was like a rug or something. And to this day, in my father's office, it covers the whole wall. And Sri Nachi's mother gave them another sandalwood deity of Krishna. That's also in their living room. Because they just love the devotees so dearly. They just always want to remember them. During their second trip to India, you can see at a Mahasatsang program with about 3,000 people, they were chanting and dancing and just overwhelmed with joy from the moment they came to the end. In fact, on my birthday at Krishna Chandra's house, they were there. They received so much love from all of you. I remember all the ladies were gathered around my mother asking about what I did when I was a child. My mother was blissful, just getting so much love and attention. And actually, I was quite miserable, thinking, what's she going to tell them? But anyways, that's part of trying to... What to say? It's part of the package. The second trip to India was incredible for them. They were given a tour of Bhaktivedanta Hospital. They were so happy, so happy. Everywhere they went back in America, they were showing photos. Even some very, very highly placed, big, big business people, bankers and everything. They had some business in India, yes, Krishna Chandra? And my father and mother insisted that they come to the temple and meet Krishna Chandra Prabhu's family, and if possible, Srinathji Prabhu's family. It's all they talk about. It's wonderful. One day, my mother, when I was visiting in America, she was very, very sincerely inquiring about what happens to the soul after death. What is reincarnation? She was very, very sincerely hearing. And she was with a very submissive and humble heart, just listening and apparently agreeing with our philosophy. My mother had Alzheimer's disease, and little by little, she was at the beginning stages when she came here to India the second time. And little by little, the nature of disease is you're unable to communicate or remember. When the disease became quite evolved, sometimes I would visit, and my father would try to get her to talk. And on one occasion, he just couldn't get her to say anything. And then I said, Hare Krishna. And she smiled and said, Hare Krishna. And from then on, my father knew that's the one thing she could say. And even when I wasn't there, when he tried to get her to talk, he would be saying, Hare Krishna. And she would go, Hare Krishna. That was one of the one things that she actually was able to remember and articulate.
something very wonderful. I met her just a few weeks ago before I came to India. And I was sincerely praying to Radha Gopinath to give mercy on them. Sri Nachi called my father and said, if you send her to India, we will take care of her fully in Vrindavan, and she could die in that holy place. Oh, you can close. You should close. Actually, leave them open for a moment. Leave them. Sri Nathji made that offer, and I couldn't believe it. My father had so much faith in Krishna devotees that he convinced both my brothers that there's no way mother can get as much love anywhere else in the world as with these devotees in Bombay. And if they take her to Vrindavan to take care of her, she'll be the happiest person. He says, I know she'll be most happy with them. And they unanimously decided to bring her to India. And all the arrangements were being made for her to leave her body in Vrindavan. But by Sri Radharani and Krishna's inconceivable will, while the preparations were being made, she left her body just 2 days back. But still, just the intention of the family to do that was something very, very special and glorious. I called my father last night and told him I was coming home just to see if I could help them. But then I have to be back in 3 days for the yatra in Mayapur. And my father said that myself and your brothers have decided that we're going to cremate her body and we're going to give 100% all of the ashes to you to put in the sacred places of India. And then he said, I know in my heart that your mother loved India and loved the devotees in India more than anything, anyone or anywhere else. And that's where she would want her remains to be, in the land of your devotees. On this day, I would like to wholeheartedly offer my gratitude to my mother for all that she has done for me in my life. And I would like to pray to all of you to very sincerely at this time pray to Sri Prabhupada, pray to Sri Gornitai, Sri Radha Gopinath, and Sri Gopal to shower their most precious blessings of mercy upon her soul. Actually, they gave their lives and did so much for me. Materially, I've never done anything really for them. But if you could help me to repay the debt by offering this sincere prayer, I will be sincerely indebted to all of you. Thank you very much.